Welcome to Culturetopia, NPR's roundup of the week's very best arts and cultural stories. I am Neda Ulaby. This week on Culturetopia, a global mix of music and politics. Kelly Clarkson won the first American Idol back in 2002, and she's the show's biggest success story. Recently, her sales soared when she endured GOP candidate Ron Paul for president. A popular Canadian rock band owns the domain name teaparty.com, and it has since the early 1990s. That's the name of the band. Now it's planning on selling it to the highest bidder. And Senegalese world music superstar Youssou N'Dour is running for president of his home country. But first,
Morocco has been called one of the winners of the Arab Spring because it avoided the bloodshed that wrecked Libya, Syria, and elsewhere. Morocco's young king, Mohammed VI, offered a new constitution and early elections. That took the steam out of protests there, known as the February 20th movement. But human rights groups say the arrest and trial of a provocative Moroccan rap artist suggest the reforms have a long way to go. NPR's Deborah Amos reports from Casablanca.
The rap songs of 24-year-old Mouad Belhout are popular here, even more so after his 4 months in jail. He's better known as El Hakid, the Defiant One, which describes lyrics explicitly critical of Morocco's social ills and the country's revered monarch. It's an attitude that also describes the young protesters of the February 20th movement. His supporters charge this trial is an attempt to silence him and them. Even his youngest fans come to the courthouse here to support him. Rahab Alami, an 11-year-old, knows the words to all his protest songs. She shows up for every court appearance, despite 4 postponements of this trial. He was arrested in an unjust way. He did nothing, but they took him to prison, she says. The activists of the February 20th movement gather at the courthouse, too. Abdullah Abakil says the arrest sends a political message.
He writes protest songs, but I don't think that he was arrested for that.
In fact, officially, the rapper's songs have nothing to do with his arrest. He was jailed on an assault charge after a brawl outside his house. Supporters say it was a setup. They add it's unusual that the Attorney General of Casablanca is heading up the prosecution team for a simple assault charge. He's in jail because he's an activist, says Abakil.
He is very popular in his neighborhood, and the regime don't want to see us as a movement win people's hearts in the poor suburbs of Casablanca.
The local media hasn't covered the trial, but word has spread, and with each postponement, the crowd of supporters grows larger. Sophie Hilali wears a badge with a picture of the rapper.
When people went to the street for the movement of 20 February, they used his songs. He's the image of this movement.
The courtroom is packed when Mouad Belhout is finally brought before the judge, a slight young man surrounded by human rights lawyers who volunteered to defend him. Judges in Morocco are appointed by the king and often base rulings on instructions from the regime. It's why there's so much interest in this case, says Karim Tazi, a businessman and political activist.
This case is a high-profile case, a symbolic case, because he's only an artist, and they want to silence him.
In a way, this trial is also a test of the power of a protest movement that won concessions from the king after mass demonstrations last year. Morocco has a new constitution. Elections in November made moderate Islamists the leading party in the government. That party has promised to reform Morocco's justice system, and human rights groups urge the new ministers to investigate the charges against a political rap star. Karim Tazi says that it's a loss for the regime either way.
Because if they free him, he's going to come back and sing again. If they keep him in jail, they're adding fuel to the anger of the movement and bringing the movement back to life. They're losing anyway.
After another postponement this week, Mouad Belhout is still in jail. But his songs sell better than ever, With his arrest, the regime has helped create a superstar. Deborah Amos, NPR News, Casablanca.
Our guest today made some news this past week when she seemed to endorse Ron Paul for president. Pop singer Kelly Clarkson saw her record sales jump 422% in a day as a result. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller. Doesn't mean I'm lonely when I'm alone. This is a track off Clarkson's latest record, Stronger. She burst onto the scene in 2002 when she became the first winner of American Idol. She'd go on to win Grammys, break records on the charts, and earn the affection of critics. One called her voice the best in pop music history. But unlike many of her contemporaries, Kelly Clarkson has managed to retain her authenticity, and you can trace that back to early 2000 when, on the strength of her voice, Kelly Clarkson was offered a record deal. She was unknown at the time, just 18 years old. She'd moved to L.A. from Texas to pursue her dream, and yet, when that deal came around, she turned it down.
The one contract that I was offered, this was my favorite thing because I deal with it on the daily now. I literally weighed 124. They told me if I lost 20 pounds that they'd sign me. And I was like, wow. And I had an eating disorder in high school for a bit. So it's like I think God kind of put me through that to, you know, make me stronger for when situations like that kind of come up and still come up, obviously.
You, that time in L.A. after high school, those 4 or 5 months you lived there, they were kind of a disaster, right?
Oh, my God. I lived, on a mattress, with this crazy girl. We lived in, a room of, these people's house, and, they didn't even allow us to use their kitchen, so we had, a little refrigerator. It was really funny. But,
you,
I mean,
you were
at the
waiting
time,
tables and things like that?
Oh, I had, 4 jobs. I worked at, coffee shops, waitressing. I did extra jobs. After that 4 or 5 months of living out there, we saved money to move in this apartment, and literally the day that the crazy girl and I moved into the apartment, it burned down.
Wow.
So, I mean, I had to move home because I, didn't have anywhere to go. So, yeah, I drove home. And then I ended up trying out for Idol right when I got home.
Simon Cowell, he has called you, hands down, the most talented Idol winner ever. Here's what he said about you.
Oh, the best by a mile is Kelly Clarkson. We got so lucky with Kelly Clarkson season one because she's not just a great American Idol winner. She's up there now with some of the greatest singers in the world. I mean, I think she's as good as someone like Celine Dion.
That's pretty high praise from a guy with a reputation for being a complete jerk.
I've actually never heard that before. I don't even know what to say to that. That was really cool. I've never heard that before.
I mean, he's comparing you to one of the greatest living singers in the world. And even critics who don't necessarily like the style of your music, they admit you have this incredible range.
Honestly, I just think we all have special gifts, everyone. You know, obviously some are more noticeable than others, and that's why there's the limelight and everybody's in it. But since I was younger, people had said, this is like your gift, this is what you're supposed to do. And I have felt that every time I'm on stage. And so there was no other option. Mr. Know-it-all, well, you think you know it all, but you
don't know a thing at all, ain't it? And it's something you're... In the video for the first single off this album, Mr. Know-it-all, you stand in front of this wall of newspaper clippings that talk about your relationship status, your weight, your sexuality. Do you feel at times that the press coverage of you has been unfair, or is it part of the territory that comes with celebrity?
Oh, I think both. I think it's supply and demand. I think people want to hear bashing things sometimes. I think that's what saddens me more than anything, because I have a really tough skin. Oh, you think that you know me now?
I want to ask you about control, Kelly, because...
Oh, Lord.
Well, in a good way. I mean, you've been pretty stubborn. I mean, you're known for being pretty stubborn, right, about maintaining control over your image, over your songs. Is that a difficult thing to do in your line of work?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And if anybody says otherwise, they're lying. The question I love to get asked is, what's the hardest part of your job? And literally, the answer is probably real sad, but it's to just to be me. Like, it's really hard because I think people, you know, have their set idea of what a pop star should be. And my whole point is like, well, if I'm the pop star, then it should be whatever I am. There's, you know, room for Katy Perry's and Adele's and Rihanna's and Lady Gaga's and Kesha's and me and Pink. I think what's great about all of us is that we represent something different.
My guest is Kelly Clarkson. Her new record is called Stronger. I want to ask you about the song The War Is Over.
I watch the days rush by me like a river. I shouldn't wait, but I'm scared to touch the water.
That song seems to have struck a chord with a lot of your fans. What is it about?
It's actually one I didn't write, but it's actually the first song we recorded for this record because everybody loved it. It tells a beautiful story that everybody relates to. Fans will come up to me and they'll be like, oh, I relate that to my family, or I relate that to an ex, or I relate that to my sister in our relationship. Like, that song for me, personally, is a lot to do with the industry. I'm just going to surround myself with some people that have the same vision and same goals as myself. I'm not going to recognize the bashing, I'm not going to recognize the negativity. And I won't let you pull me in.
Let me ask you some true or false questions.
Okay.
You have 12 tattoos, including one behind each ear.
I have 13 now.
Sorry, that's 13.
No,
okay.
It's a new one.
Okay,
so.
Fine. You own 9 guns, I read.
I do, 9.
And you sleep with a Colt 45.
Yes.
That's true.
Yes, well, I live alone.
I go, fair enough.
So,
okay.
Yeah, I live alone, so I'm not going out like that. I got no chance if some man breaks in my house. So, yeah, I have a gun.
Sometimes you drink Chivas and sing karaoke to Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, but sometimes I drink vodka and do that as well.
I see, okay. But if you show up and do karaoke, I mean, does it quickly fill up with people saying, oh, my God, Kelly Clarkson's in there doing karaoke?
Oh, yeah, and by that time, I'm so drunk, I'm like, yeah, let's duet. Like, I'm like duetting with people. So.
Kelly, this past week, you made some news, of course.
Ron Paul.
In Iowa, Ron Paul.
Who knew, right? Wow.
You endorsed him on the internet. You said you really liked him. And your sales, your record sales actually rose, I read, 442%. Talk a little bit about him. What do you like about him?
Well, first of all, I love that, like, something I tweet makes CNN. That says something about our world right there. But, you know, first of all, it was just funny. I was, like, sitting at home with my brother watching Leno. And, you know, he was on Leno. And I was like, man, I was like, I like this dude. I liked him the last time around. I like a lot. You know, he believes in states having the rights. And I think that that's very important. And I've always been about less government. And so I like him. And it's simple as that, man. That's all I said. I was like, oh, man, I like Ron Paul. Too bad he's probably not going to get the nomination. But, I like him. And then the whole friggin' world, like, it went into a frenzy. And everybody started tweeting me. And it was just crazy. But I do enjoy, like, being able to go back and forth with people and find out stuff, you know, about not even Ron Paul, but maybe stuff I didn't know about Obama or Romney or whoever. But, like, I think it really got blown out of proportion. So
you never, I mean, Ron Paul.
I did enjoy the sales. I'll tell you that.
I'm sure. And maybe Ron Paul will get a cart and will get the Clarkson bump.
I know. I was like, hell, I'm going to start endorsing everybody. I was like, I'm just going to start saying names on stuff and get people by my album. You think you got the best of me? Think you've had the last
laugh? Bet you think that everything good is gone. That's Kelly Clarkson. Her new record is called Stronger. Kelly Clarkson, thank you so much for joining us.
I thank you very much. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Stand a little taller.
What do Michel Martelly, Joseph Estrada, and closer to home Ronald Reagan have in common? All three were performers who became presidents of their respective countries, Haiti, Philippines, and of course the U.S. Now, Senegal's singing sensation, Youssou N'Dour, wants to follow suit. He's announced his intention to throw his hat in the ring. Indur is challenging Senegal's veteran leader and other candidates in the presidential election next month. NPR's Ophébia Quistarctan filed this report.
Youssou N'Dour shot to international stardom in 1994 with this hit, 7 Seconds, sung with Nina Cherry. The Senegalese Mbalax musician has gone on to win a Grammy and become one of Africa's most influential and popular singers.
7 seconds away, just as long as I stay, I'll be waiting.
The 52-year-old, known simply as Youssou, grew up poor in Senegal's capital, Dakar. Today, he has his own radio station and television channel in Senegal, owns a national newspaper, and runs a business empire. He also served as a UN Goodwill Ambassador, espousing noble causes like fighting malaria. And now, Youssou N'Dour says he's ready to become Senegal's new president, and he anticipates victory in the election due February 26th.
I'm going to win this election in the first round. Definitely. No question. I'm the most credible, most popular. And what I say is coming from the people.
Youssou N'Dour told the BBC he is confident of both local and international support.
I believe if I do here in Senegal good governance, freedom, and a lot of things the international community waiting for, you know, they're going to support me for my program. I think the world have to support new model. I want to change Senegal, then change Africa.
But will his undeniable popularity and street cred as a singer in Senegal necessarily translate into votes for Youssou as president? He's never held elective office, and questions are being raised over whether, without much formal education, he dropped out of school at age 13, he has the political smarts to lead Senegal. The West African nation proudly flaunted its democratic credentials when other countries in the region were battling coups, rebellions, and civil wars. Senegalese opposition politician Abdoulaye Bachili.
You know, the question is whether an artist can be considered as somebody fit for leadership. This is the first time this kind of thing happened in Senegal.
There's bad blood between Senegal's opposition and the octogenarian president, Abdoulaye Wade, who's seeking a third term in office. His critics accuse Wade of political nepotism and trying to cling to power. Youssou N'Dour used to be close to the president, but has become one of his most outspoken critics. He and many others say it's time for Wade to go.
Abdoulaye Wade doesn't have the right to go to the election. Our constitution say no. I think also, you know, even I have great respect for him. He's too old. He's too old.
Youssou N'Dour is already chanting the mantra of the politician, making campaign promises to provide food, electricity, health, and education for all in Senegal. Ophébia Quistarctan, NPR News.
Point your web browser to teaparty.com, and you will not find a site devoted to the political movement. You will find the website of the Tea Party, a Canadian rock band that has owned the domain name since the early 1990s. Well, now the band is hoping to cash in, and as NPR's Joel Rose reports, there seems to be no shortage of would-be buyers.
The Tea Party may not be well-known in the U.S., but trust me, they're big in Canada.
With nothing to do,
the Tea Party started in Toronto in 1990. They named themselves after the poetry and hash-smoking sessions of Beat Generation writers Allen Ginsberg and Jack Kerouac. By the early 2000s, the Tea Party had recorded 8 albums, toured the world, and sold 1.6 million records. They broke up in 2005, then got back together. And all along, the band got offers to sell its website, teaparty.com.
There's a bunch of small people kicking the tires and seeing if we'd be interested. But the first real political offer came in this summer that was of serious note anyway.
Stuart Chatwood plays bass for the Tea Party. He doesn't want to say who that offer was from, but he will say it was, quote, significant.
It had a mid-7-digit back end to it, and it was like, whoa. All of a sudden, we realized that our little house that we had built happened to be sitting right on top of a gold mine.
Is it safe to look within and erase all that's been?
Chatwood won't say much about his politics, except that he's very happy with his socialized medical care in Canada. Chatwood's first thought was to sell the website to Jon Stewart or Stephen Colbert, but that didn't work out. So the band decided to sell TeaParty.com to the highest bidder. They hired a broker called Cedo, which sold the domain name Sex.com for $13 million. Cedo spokesperson Kathy Nielsen doesn't think the Tea Party domain name will fetch that much, but she says it could be worth more than $1 million.
You know, say it's a Tea Party group that needs it for fundraising. They can make a business case out of it and understand how much traffic the domain gets and how much search value they can get. And they can put numbers to that and say, well, it's worth X amount to me.
Others think X is going to be a relatively modest amount in the low to mid 6 figures. Bill Sweetman is the general manager of Yummy Names, a firm that connects companies with domain names.
This is one of those types of domains where shelf life or timing is so critical. Because right now the domain looks like it might be worth a lot. But after the election, this domain could be worth almost nothing. So it's a bit of a gamble.
Another big question is who's going to cough up the dough? The Tea Party movement doesn't have a centralized top-down organization. Some of the better-funded groups, like the Tea Party Express and the Tea Party Patriots, already have websites. But Sweetman says those groups still have to consider buying TeaParty.com, if only to block their political rivals from doing the same.
How much would they pay to keep this out of the hands of another group or a party or somebody that wanted to put up a sort of an anti-Tea Party website at that great domain name? Keeping it out of the hands of the wrong people is certainly worth something to them. How much, time will tell.
No matter what happens, the proposed sale has already worked out well for the band. The Tea Party reunited last year and toured for the first time in 6 years. Bassist Stuart Chatwood says all the unexpected media attention on the band's website did help promote those shows. But in the end, it's really worth more to somebody else.
As a band, we rely on Facebook and Twitter and the website. It's still very important, but we can easily rename our website to something else and continue on business as usual. But to someone else, just the purity of TeaParty.com is just so valuable.
The Tea Party's broker expects a deal to close in the next few months. So the next time you click on TeaParty.com, the site could be singing a very different tune. Joel Rose, NPR News.
Are you come?
Call it diplomacy with a laugh. Today, three Indian-American comedians began a 7-city tour of India, sponsored by the U.S. Embassy in New Delhi. NPR's Elizabeth Blair reports on the Make Chai, Not War comedy tour.
Three comedians, very different styles.
People always ask me if it was tough growing up with the name Rajiv Kumar Satyal in Southwest Ohio. What do you think? Right.
Rajiv Satyal is waif thin, a former marketer for Procter & Gamble and the founder of Make Chai Not War.
Pretty much, I was the only kid in class whose name was never called during roll call. Okay.
And there's Azhar Usman from Chicago, a big, burly guy with long hair and a full beard.
I'm perfectly aware most of you have never seen somebody who looks like me smile before.
And Hari Kondabolu, an edgy, cerebral comic from Queens, New York.
I was doing a festival in Denmark in April, and I got heckled by a member of the audience who stood up and yelled, "Go back to America," which is incredible because I've been told to go back to so many countries and never to America.
The comedy tour Make Chai, Not War has been around since 2007. It's a little like Kings of Comedy, but with Indian Americans. Azhar Usman says so far they've performed a handful of shows around the U.S.
Whenever we've staged it, we've always gotten a solid turnout by Indians of all stripes, Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, Christians, atheists, what have you.
On a separate solo tour in London, Usman caught the attention of Michael Macy, who at the time was the cultural attaché for the U.S. Embassy there.
He's hilarious.
When Michael Macy moved to the embassy in New Delhi, he brought Usman over for some solo shows of India. And that got the ball rolling to bring over three comedians for this seven-city tour. It's costing the State Department about $88,000. Macy says the embassy agreed to sponsor Make Chai Not War because stand-up comedy is a unique part of American culture.
This commitment to free speech, this commitment to free discussion of what can be difficult or sensitive topics. It's very American.
Me walking into the airport, heads turn simultaneously. Security guys like, shh, we got a Muhammad at 4 o'clock. 10-4, Muhammad at 4, over now. You get the smelly one, I got the hairy one.
Azhar Usman is the only one of the three who's performed in India before. And since so much of comedy is about cultural references and language, Hari Kondabolu says he's excited but also nervous because he's American.
Part of what we do as comedians, or at least what I do, is to figure out where those boundaries are and see what I want to push because I'm trying to make a point. And I don't really know where the boundaries are in a different country.
So he's been reading up on Indian news.
And then I've been chatting with my mom a lot.
She's originally from Hyderabad, India. One of the jokes Kondabolu says he might do is about an ex-girlfriend from London.
But she's over at my place every night of the week, eating my food, telling me what to do, hitting me, and that's when I knew this wasn't love. This English woman was trying to colonize me.
With some minor tweaks, Kondabolu says his mom gave this one the green light.
And after a month, she finally left. And she took most of my best stuff with her. Food, art, self-esteem, all gone. And she left a few things. She left some clothes and some books. And, of course, an extensive railway system.
There will be no State Department censorship on this tour, says Azhar Usman.
We're invited over there as artists. And the whole premise of a tour like this is that we are comedians and we enjoy freedom of speech. And as Americans, we can say whatever we want to say.
All three comedians say it's a thrill to be able to perform in their parents' homeland. Rajiv Satyal says the goal of the Make Chai Not War tour of India is simple. Some great new jokes and hopefully a lot of laughs. Elizabeth Blair, NPR News.
That's it for this week. You can find links to all the stories we have today and subscribe to this podcast at npr.org/culturetopia. Culturetopia is produced by Mike Katziff and executive produced by Sarah Sarazen. I am Netta Ulibi. Thanks for listening to Culturetopia. So long.